And we're holding on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Actually, on Tes. Actually, we're holding. Sorry, on Tes Zayin Amud Beis, the fourth line from the end of the narrow lines. So we're holding 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We talked about yesterday. Well, now the Gemara is going to begin by introducing it again about the matter of Hanukkah, where the Torah tells us that when an Eved Ivri or an Omer Hevriya goes free, then you give them Hanukkah, you give them certain gifts, which we're going to focus on further on in the Gemara, the details of that din. In fact, the Chinuch, by the way, says we can learn from that that even not with an Eved Ivri or Omer Hevriya, just any time you had somebody working for you, it's the right thing to do to give them a gift when they're leaving your employ. In English, you have the concept of severance gifts when a person leaves a job, and they got that they as with many other things in the world, they got that idea from the Torah. Anyway, so we talked about yesterday. Reb Shimon had said that out of all the cases, out of all the possible ways in which an Eved Ivri or Omer Hevriya might go free, there are only four of them where Hanukkah is required. And he said three of them among those four, three of them apply to a man. And three of them apply to a woman. There's an overlap of two between them, but there's one that applies to men and not women, and one that applies to women and not men. And we were discussing what those were exactly. We know that simonim, developing shtei sairas, applies only to women and not to men. Originally, we thought so. We were discussing what was the one that applies to what was the one that applies to men and not to women. So we were discussing it might be the fact that a nirtza, that once his ear is pierced, then when the Odin dies, he goes free, as we're going to talk about later on in the Gemara. And we argued that maybe not necessarily, maybe it might be maybe it might mean the one where the one where Yovel comes for somebody whose ear was pierced, where again, since the woman doesn't ever get her ear pierced, then therefore that one wouldn't count to her, that one wouldn't count towards her three. Anyways, the Gemara says Gufa. So getting back to what we said before, Elu Shema Nikim Lahem, Elu Ma Nikim Lahem, the following kinds of avodim and almost you give them Hanukkah when they leave. Hayotze b'shanim, when they when they go out because of years, because 6 years have passed, over Yovel, when they go out because of Yovel, over Misas Odin, or when the Odin dies, which we started talking about before, and we're going to explain further on in the Gemara. There's two aspects within that. The Omer Hevriya always goes free when the master dies. The Eved Ivri, it depends. If the master left behind, if the Eved Ivri was not nirtza, if he didn't have his ear pierced, and the Odin left over a son, then the Eved Ivri continues working for the son. Otherwise, if he didn't leave over any sons, only some other kind of heir, or if the Eved had his ear pierced, then he goes free when the Odin dies. So that's another one. But Omer Hevriya b'simanim, and when Omer Hevriya leaves her status of Omer Hevriya because she developed simanim. So those are the cases where you do Hanukkah. Aval, but there are other possible cases where the Eved might leave and does not get Hanukkah. One is if he ran away during the time when he's supposed to be a slave, and now the end of the time comes, the 6 years or Yovel or whatever come, and he's still away. The Yotze b'giren kesef, and also if he leaves because he deducted money, because he was able to earn enough money to buy his freedom, and we deduct the amount of time he worked so far. Ein ma nikim loy, so those kind do not get Hanukkah. That's the Tanakhama. Reb Meir says no. It's true that if he ran away, then he doesn't get Hanukkah. But if he's leaving because he had deducted the money, because he's able to pay for his freedom, then he does get Hanukkah. Reb Shimon Omer, and then the Braisa continues. Again, we have quoted this whole Braisa before. We quoted the second half first. First, we quoted Reb Shimon's part, and we were using that as we tried to use that as a proof against Rish Lakish, and we said not necessarily, but then we quoted the first half where it clearly listed the cases where Hanukkah is warranted, and we saw over there that Misa Sa'odin is included, and we said according to Rish Lakish, Misa Sa'av should have been included as well, and it wasn't, therefore that contradicts him. So now the Braisa continues with the second half. Reb Shimon Omer Abba Manikimahem, that Reb Shimon says there were four cases where they get Hanukkah. Shloisha Be'ish, three of them apply to a man, namely the 6 years Yovel and Yovel for a regular one, the 6 years Yovel for a regular Eved and Yovel for a Nirtza, or Shloisha Be'isha, and three other ones or three overlapping ones apply to a woman, 6 years Yovel or Simanim. And it's impossible to have four of them that apply to either one of them, to an Eved or an Amma, because Simanim are not applicable to a man, he doesn't go free with Simanim, and Ritzia is not applicable to a woman. So in other words, essentially, he's agreeing with the Tanakhama and saying that that since he doesn't have Giren Kesef or Bereach on his list, then therefore basically he's agreeing with the Tanakhama and giving a nice handy way to remember that even though in principle there are at least six ways that he could go free, only four of them warrant Hanukkah. There's actually more as well, because again there is Misa Sa'odin, which we said that which we said that not necessarily is he putting that on his list. That's why we said, according to him, we don't have to have that. We shouldn't expect that if we followed Rish Lakish, that Misa Sa'av would have to be included either. But the point is, this list of Reb Shimon's is including only things that require some kind of that require some kind of action or some kind of scheduled thing. So 6 years of Yovel are all pre-scheduled. None of them involve action. Actually, all of them involve 6 years Yovel, 6 years Yovel, Nirtza's Yovel, and Simanim. All of those we said are things that are pre-scheduled. Or in the case of Simanim, you don't have a latest possible date for it, but you have an earliest possible date because it won't be effective before she's 12. So Reb Shimon is listing only those. He's not listing things like Misa Sa'odin or according to the Shlokish Misa Sa'av, which aren't scheduled like that. So the Gemara says Menahani Mili. Now, where does the Tanakhama get that only those cases get Hanukkah and not the Bereach, the one who ran away, or the Giren Kesef, the one who paid for his freedom? So like this, the Tanan Abanim, we learn in another Braisa, Yochol lo yumanikim elo liyotza b'sheish, you would think from the Pesukim that you give Hanukkah only to somebody who leaves after 6 years, because that's the way the Pesuk introduces the mitzvah. It says, ki yimochol lecha achicha ha'ivri oy ha'ivriya, when your Jewish brother or sister is, so, when your Jewish sibling, a man or a woman is sold to you, he works for you for 6 years, and then the next pasuk continues. When you send him free, don't send him empty-handed. Give him Hanukkah. So based on that, on the flow of the pesukim over there, it sounds like you give Hanukkah only when he leaves after 6 years. So the braisa continues. How do we know that it also includes the one who goes free in Yovel, or when the master dies, or an Omer Hevriya when she develops Simanim, that all of those get Hanukkah as well? Tamad Lema to Shalachenu. Therefore, the Pasuk says, first it says that when he's worked for you for 6 years, you should send him free from you. And then the next pasuk continues, and when you send him, then you should give him the Hanukkah. So therefore, so that's a ribui. The double teshalchenu teaches us that it includes other ways in which he's sent away, other ways in which he's let to go free, where he gets Hanukkah. But then continues the Braisa, Yochol Shani Marba Af Yochol Shani Marba Bereach by the Yotze Begudin Kesef. So then you would think in that case that maybe we should also include the one who ran away or the one who does Begudin Kesef, who pays for his freedom. Talmud Lama, v'chis shalchenu chofshi me'imach. No, because since the pasuk says, when you send him free from among you. So only misha shiluchei me'imach, so it applies only to somebody where the sending away is me'imach with your das. Now, not all of them include his, not all of them involve his das. Misa sa'odin, for example, doesn't involve his das, but fine, that's also a passive thing. That's also the odin died, and therefore the eved or the almost term expires. In the case of an eved ivri, again, depending whether he's nirtza and depending whether there's a son or not. But the point is that as far as cases where the odin is available to send him away, then and the pasuk is saying it has to be me'imach, that you do it on your own. So therefore, yotzeh, but not on your own. In other words, but you're doing it knowingly. So you know 6 years have passed, and therefore you're letting him go. You know that yovel has come, and therefore you're letting him go, and so forth. Yotzeh bereach, yotzeh begirin kesef, as opposed to when he runs away, or when there's girin kesef, she'en shiluchah me'imach, then he's not going free on his own. Then he's not with it. Then he's not midaitcha. Then he's kind of going free on his own. Now, when he goes free after 6 years or yovel or whatever, is also baal korcha. It's not that he wants to. But there's an idea. In other words, that when he goes free after 6 years or yovel or what have you, it's really more because the time has expired. To begin with, he was only sold up to that point. But Girin Kesef is really more. He's still in his term. Just he's able to buy out the rest of his term. So therefore, that's not really considered going out midas. So that's why the Tanakhama says, and Reb Shimon agrees with him, that in those cases of Bereach and Girin Kesef, he doesn't get hand up. Reb Meir Omer Bereach in Ma'anikim Loi. Reb Meir, on the other hand, says that if he runs away, it's true, he doesn't get hand up. De'ein Shiluchim Me'imach, because Reb Meir would say, sure, you can't call that Shiluchim Me'imach, because he went away on his own, and you had nothing to do with it. But Avo Yotzeb Girin Kesef, Shiluchim Me'imach, but when he goes away, when he leaves, because he's paying money, the fact is there is shiluchei me'imach because you're accepting the money, and therefore the mayor can consider that to be me'imach, and therefore that hanako would apply. Okay, so that's the underlying reason for the machlokas is how to darshan this word me'imach. Well, the Gemara asks now. We're saying that if he ran away, he doesn't get hanako. The Gemara is asking, never mind Hanukkah, Bereach HaShlom HaBoy, shouldn't he have to make up for the time that he missed during the time he ran away? So let's say he worked, let's say, for 2 years and then he ran away. Forget about the question whether he gets Hanukkah if 4 years later he still hasn't come back. And never mind that. What should eventually happen is when he comes back, he'll complete his 4 years then. And then at that point, he's going to be work for 6 years and he'll get Hanukkah. What do we mean? What is this case where he doesn't get Hanukkah because he ran away? And in fact, Titania, we learn in a Braisa. Minayim labereach shechayev lahashlim. How do we know that if an Eved runs away, he still has to finish up the missing years? Therefore, the pasuk says he works for 6 years, implying that regardless, no matter what the scenario is, he always has to work for 6 years. Continues the braisa yochal afilu chola. You would think that the same thing applies. Even if he became sick. What if he was sick and he couldn't work for the 6 years? You would think also he eventually has to make up for it once he recovers. No, Tamad Lemo Vashviyas Yetze. The same pasuk continues. In the seventh year, he goes free, which implies that he always goes free after 7 years, even if after 6 years, in the seventh year, even if he hadn't worked for six complete years. So the point is, though, this braisa is saying that that if he runs away, we don't just say, okay, well, he ran away, that's it, he's a goner. Once he comes back, or if we ever get him back, then he's required to finish up the 6 years. So the answer is, Amar of Sheshes, Hoch Mayaskinen, Gensha Borach, Upoga Bo Yoivo. the case would be where he ran away and then Yeovil came about while he was away. So he had worked, let's say, for 2 or 4 years or whatever. Then shortly after he ran away, before the 6 years are up, Yeovil came. So one way or the other, he's going free anyway because of Yeovil. Since he was taken away by Yeovil, since Yeovil came and he's free anyway. So you would think, therefore, that we should consider that it's still Shiluchah Me'imach. The fact is, had he still been at the job, he would have gone free with the das of the Adon. Again, maybe not with the consent of the Adon. The Adon doesn't want to send him in Yeovil, but he knows the Torah says that he's doing it. So we could consider it Shiluchah Me'imach. So therefore, we should not penalize him. The Nanikle, and we should give him Hanukkah. Kamash Malon, and therefore the Braise is telling us that not. But it's true. If there hadn't been Yeovil in between, then never mind that. We would make him come back and finish off the 6 years anyway. Tosfos Riyazokin discusses a little bit over here what exactly is the case. What exactly do we mean when Poga by Yeovil? So again, Rashi had said it could even be the day after he ran away. Then Tosfos Yeshanim mentions that there can be the difference. Was he still away when Yeovil came? And he brings an explanation that let's say you could have, for example, let's say he ran away a year before Yeovil. So now, even after Yeovil, we would make him come back and work the extra year to make it off, because the fact is, had he been there, he would have worked for a year before Yeovil, and therefore maybe we make him make that up afterwards. Anyway, the point is that because of that, then therefore the fact is he had run away, and therefore we, even though in principle he would have gone free because of Yeovil anyway, nevertheless we penalize him and we deny him Hanukkah. The Gemara says Omamar. Now we said in this previous Braisa Yochel Afilu Chola. We said that even if he became sick, you would think that even if he became sick, he also has to make up the time. And we said that not. Therefore, the pasuk says he goes free in the seventh year. So the Gemara asks, "Afilu chola." Maybe the Gemara is stating as an explanation, "Afilu chola kol sheish." Even if he was sick the entire 6 years. So it can be a statement that we're explaining the Braisa that way, or it can be a question. Would that be the case even? By the way, the Rashba brings over here from a Yerushalmi, given that, again, as we have many times in the Gemara, we have a ribui for one, we have a miut for the other. Why are we including the case where he was sick and saying that he doesn't have to make up any time versus the Bereach, we say he does have to make up the time. So the Yerushalmi wins, because after all, it's more logical. The one who's sick is at least Bereshusai. He's at least under the Reshus of the Adon. The one who runs away is not. So therefore, it's more logical to say that he would have to make up the time and the other one would not. Now we're saying that if he was sick, so we're saying, Afilu Chola Kol Sheish, or it can be a question, Afilu Chola Kol Sheish. You're telling me even if he was sick the entire 6 years, we learn in another braisa, during the 6 years, he was sick for 3 years, and then he worked only 3 years, he's not obligated to make up the lost time. But if he was sick the entire 6 years, then he has to make it up when he recovers. So we see that it's not necessarily that he never has to make up the time if he was sick all 6 years, whereas the first Braisa didn't make that distinction. Why not? The answer is, Rav Sheshes says the Braisa that implies that he doesn't have to make up the time at all is talking about where at least during the 6 years, even though he was sick, he could do some work. He could even do very light work like sewing. So as long as he can do some kind of work during the time he's sick, then we don't make him make up the extra time. The master had bought him figuring that he's going to do heavier labor, and now he's not capable. Okay, nevertheless, though, the fact is he's able to do some kind of work for you, even if it's just sewing. So therefore, even if that covered the entire 6 years, he doesn't have to make up the time later. But if he wasn't able to do anything at all, that's where the second braisa is saying that if it was 3 years, then he doesn't have to make it up. But if it was six, then he does. And now the Gemara is going to ask, what about anything between three and six? Tosfos gives an interesting discussion over here. What about not an Eved Ivri, but a regular hired worker? What would happen, for example, you hire somebody to teach your children, and he was sick part of the time and couldn't teach them. Would we say the same thing, that they shouldn't have to make up the time? So Tosfos discusses on the basis of other Gemaras, maybe not necessarily. An Eved Ivri, after all, is the master owns him. So on the other hand, a Malamed, you don't own him. He just hired him. He just hired himself out. So if he can't do the job, then he should only get paid for what he actually did. Tosfos also mentions an interesting point in this regard, is that we talked about the other day. The pasuk says ki mishne schar socher, an Eved Ivri has worked for you twice as much as a socher, as a hired worker. Now, one thing we said was that an Eved Ivri works for, so that an Eved Ivri works both by day and by night, because you have the whole business with the Shivcha Knanis, whereas a Socher does not. Here, Tosfos is taking it in another direction, which is, and we mentioned this briefly the other day, that a Socher normally works for a maximum of 3 years. An Eved Ivri is different, he works for 6 years. There are, in fact, we showed him, we'll say, on the basis of that, that maybe a person shouldn't hire himself out for a contract job or whatever for more than 3 years, because then in effect he's making himself like an Eved. Anyway, the point is that Tosfos says, so when it comes to the Eved, since after all, Socher by definition is for a maximum of 3 years, here the Eved at least had 3 years of work because he was sick for only 3 years, so therefore we're not going to obligate him to make it up, as opposed to other kinds of hired workers. When you hire somebody, for example, to be a Melamed, where it's on an annual contract, then we can say more that however much time he worked is how much time he gets paid for, and we're not going to have to compensate him for the time when he was sick and couldn't do the job. So far what we have is that if during the time that he was sick he could do any kind of work, then we don't make him make up the time at all. If during that time there was a period when he couldn't do any work at all, and it was the entire 6 years, then we said he still has to make it up later on. But if it was only 3 years, then not. So now the Gemara says, "How go for kasha?" Well, you have a contradiction in the Braisa. What happens between 3 and 6? Amrit cholosh sholosh va'avad sholosh ein chayev hashlem. You're saying that if he was sick for three years and he worked for the other 3 years, then he doesn't have to make up the time. So the implication seems to be that if he was sick for 4 years, he would have to make up the time. But then the Braisa continues, only if he's sick the entire 6 years does he have to make it up, implying if it was 4 years, then he doesn't have to. So what is it? And the answer is, what the Braisa means to say is, once he was sick for 4 years, that's the equivalent for this purpose of having been sick the entire 6 years, and therefore he's going to have to make up the time. So in other words, what we have is, by combining together the braises, all the dinim that we learned from the braises, we get like this. If he was sick for 3 years or less, then even if he was so sick that he couldn't do any work at all, he doesn't have to make up that time. If it was any more than 3 years, and the Mishnah Melech, I think it is, explains that when we say 4 years, we mean anything more than three. If he was sick for more than 3 years, then it depends. If during that time he could do at least some work, then he doesn't have to make it up. And if he couldn't do any work at all, then already he has to make up that lost time. If he has to make it up, then he has to make it up. If not, then not. Either way, once the 6 years are over, then he's going to be one of the ones who gets Hano. Okay. So now let's talk about the dinim of Hanukkah. Tonanabonim, kamamat nikim loy. How much do you have to give as Hanukkah to the Eved? Now in the Psukim, all it says is, Hanik tanik lemitzoin chomi gonachomi ikvecha. You should give him Hanukkah. And what the word Hanukkah itself means, by the way, Rashi on the Pasuk there brings a couple of possibilities. One is that the word onok means the shodash enek means the neck. So it can mean like you So it can mean like you pile the gifts around his neck as though it's like a necklace that he's going to be wearing, so to speak. You're giving him from your flocks of animals, from your wine and from your oil. He's obviously not, and then we're going to talk about so from your wine and from your from your sheep. The pasuk lists your sheep, your granary, so your grain, and your kvecha, your wine press. So obviously you're not literally putting those around his neck, but so Rashi actually gives two explanations. One is that since the neck is high up, means you do this in a very public, high up way. That should be very obvious that you gave him this good. And another explanation is, so to speak, like you're loading it up around his neck, where now he can carry it around. And then the other Mephoshim point out other points. The Eben Ezra makes a point over there that's the word anokim, also like anokim magagor esecha, means a beautiful necklace around your neck. So here it means like you give him a beautiful gift. Whatever the case, the point is that the Torah is saying just that you give him mitzon chomi gon chomi kvecha, doesn't say the amount. So now the Braisa is going to deal with what's the actual amount. So how much? Chomish sloim mikom min v'min. You give him five sloim worth of each of the three kinds of things that it says in the pasuk. So five sloim worth of sheep, five of grain, and five of wine. Shein chamesh esrei sloim, which amounts altogether to 15 sloim. And the Gemara is going to ask soon why we need to be told that. Everybody knows that 5 times 3 is 15. So we'll get to that soon. Divrei Meir, that's what a Meir said. That's the amount that you have to give him. The minimum amount that you have to give him. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shloshim, kis shloshim shel eved. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you have to give him at least 50 sloy, you have to give at least 30 sloyim's worth between all the things. And the reason why 30 is that's the equivalent to the 30 that you pay if an eved gets killed. The Torah tells us in Parashas Mishpatim that if you have an eved knani, there it's talking about an eved knani. We're going to explain later on why it is we're applying this to an eved ivri. But anyway, if you have an eved knani who if somebody else if you're sure kills somebody else's eved knani, then you have to pay a knas. And the knas that you pay is the knas that you pay is 30 sloim. So Rabbi Yehuda is learning from that the same thing when it comes to Hanukkah has to be 30 sloim. We'll explain further on in the Gemara why he's associating those two things. What does one of those have to do with the other? We'll get to that soon. Reb Shimon, chamishim kachamishim shebe'erchin. Reb Shimon says you have to give him 50 because that's the equivalent of the largest of the erchin. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas B'chokoisai that if you declare erki olai or erkoish or ploini olai or whatever, then you have to pay the Bis Mikdash an appropriate amount. The largest of the erchim over there is for a man between 20 and 60 years old, and that would be 50 sloyim. So Reb Shimon is learning from that that you have to give 50 sloyim worth for Hanukkah. Okay, so let's analyze that. Omer mar chomish sloyim mikol min v'min, shein chamesh esrei sloyim divrei Meir. Reb Meir had said you have to give him 5 sloyim from each of the three types, which equals altogether 15. So the Gemara asks, Reb Meir bin Yonah osel ashmenan, is Reb Meir coming to tell us math? We know 5 times 3 is 15. Why does he need to tell us the total of 15? And the answer is Hocha Mashmon. Reb Meir wants to inform us. What it is Reb Meir is saying he's not allowed to go below that value. But if he gives less of one thing and more of the other, there's no problem with it as long as the total is at least 15. So in other words, Reb Meir would say, yes, I'm learning from a pasuk, as the Gemara is going to explain now, that it's 5 of each. But if you want to give him instead, let's say 4 sloyim worth of sheep and 6 of grain and so forth, then that's fine as long as you're giving him a total of 15. Okay. So my time did a mayor. Why does your mayor say 15 and specifically that he's saying 5 of each one? Yalif reikam reikam mibchur. Because he learns Xero Shavan, the word reikam from a b'chor, specifically from Pinyin Aben of a b'chor, where the pasuk says, "Lois shalchenu reikam, don't send him empty-handed." by pigging a ben. The expression is kol b'chor banecha tifteh. You should redeem all your firstborn sons. V'lo yirou fanei reikam, and my face should not be seen empty-handed. So in simple pshat, and Rashi explains on the pasuk, those are two different mitzvahs. One redeem your b'chor, do pidyon haben, and two, when you're appearing the Beis Hamikdash on the Shalosh Regalim, don't come empty handed and bring a korban. But Rameir is saying that the word reikam is also referring back to the b'chor, and therefore the pasuk with that is giving us gzeira shava that the same way as pidyon haben is five sloim malahal and chomish sloim afkan chomish sloim. The same way as by pidyon haben, it's five sloim. So it is over here, five sloim of each one. So we want to ask, "Ema chomish sloim mikulhu?" Okay, but then how do you know it means five sloim individually of each one? Maybe it means five sloim total across the three things. And the answer is iksiv reikam of a soif kedikamer. Sure, if it said reikam at the end, if it said, for example, give him hanaka and don't send him away empty-handed, then maybe you'd be right that yeah, it would mean only five. Hashdichtiv reikam bereisha, but since here it says reikam first it says loy shalchanu reikam, and then in the next pasuk it says hanik tanik loy, then therefore we can say shodi reikam atzoyin reikam agoran ayek reikam ayekad. Then what it means is the Torah is hinting to us to take the word reikam and apply it to each of the three things mentioned in the next pasuk. So therefore it means don't send him reikam from sheep, don't send him reikam from grain, don't send him reikam from wine, and therefore that means that to each one, the individual gzeira shava of reikam applies, and therefore you get five of each one. So the Gemara asks, if you're learning a gzeira shava of the word reikam, why are you learning from pidyon haben? V'neilaf reikam reikam me'ola sur'iya. Instead, we could learn the other end of the gzeira shava could be by the ola sur'iya. Many times we find that when the Chachamim are told a gzeira shava, when they learned it from their Rebbeim, when Hashem first gave the gzeira shava to Moshe, it didn't mention the specific words in the Torah that are supposed to be used for the gzeira shava. It mentioned the word in this case that there's a gzeira shava on the word reikam, but it didn't say which reikams to use. So then maybe we should apply. Maybe we should take it from olas re'iya, and an olas re'iya is a lot less. Rashi points out that the Gemara in Chagiga, the Mishnah, and the Gemara in Chagiga tell us that an olas re'iya only has to be worth two silver ma'a, which is a lot less than five sloyim. We learned previously on Daf Yud Beis that there were six ma'a to the dinner and four dinner to the selah. So a ma'a is 1/24 of a selah. So here you're saying it has to be five sloyim. He was saying it's five sloyim, but the olas re'iya is only two ma'a, which would be two more would be 1/12 of a selah, and therefore 1/60 of what you're talking about, what the mayor is saying. So maybe learn from there. And the answer is Amakrasha Beracha Shamalakecha. Fine, but the pasuk says, give him as Hashem blessed you. So that means, in other words, that the implication is darshan the pasuk in such a way that it'll be a larger gift that is appropriate to the amount that Hashem blessed you. Tosfos actually asked the other way around. Why don't we say that the olas re'iya should have to be worth five sloyim? And it explains that apparently it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai that it only has to be two more. But again, we're saying you can't say that should apply to Hanukkah now, because by Hanukkah it says Hashem berachah Hashem alekecha, so it has to be in keeping with the bracha that Hashem gave you. Okay, so that explains Reb Meir's opinion. Next, Rabbi Yehuda on the shloshim k'shloshim shel eved. Rabbi Yehuda had said it's 30 sloyim, like the amount that's paid when an eved knani is killed by somebody's shor or other animal. So my time with Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that? He learns a different gzeira shava. Yalef nesina nesina me eved. He learns a gzeira shava on the word nesina, giving from an eved. Where here it says that you should give him titen loy. The Hanukkah by the Eved, and also by the Eved who's killed by a shur, the expression is Kesef Shloshim Shkolim Yiten La'adonav. So therefore, we have a Gzeira Shava Malahal and Shloshim Afkan Shloshim. Just like over there, it's 30. The same way over here. So they want to ask for Neilaf Nesin and Nesin Me'erchin. So instead, why doesn't he learn that Gzeira Shava from Erchin? Whereby Erchin, it also has the expression of giving. Now, when it comes to Erchin of people, actually, the Tosfos Rid points out that it actually never uses the word nosan, never uses the root nosan over there. So he wants to say that it's talking about the 50 shkolim that goes if you makdish a field and then you buy it back from Hekdish. Then Achronim, the Mishnah Melech, and the Rashash point out that the pasuk v'nosan that it mentions over there is in connection with the Sedei Mikna, where you don't have that 50 sloyim specifically. The Shita L'Noid L'Mi points out that after all you can find you do have a pasuk v'nosan as a erkecha by Yemahu, which in the context of it is talking about a Sedei Mikna, but we can also apply it to Erchin. Okay. In any case, so why don't we learn from there? Therefore, that it should be 50. So the answer is two answers. First of all, we have a general principle throughout Shas that if you have two ways of learning a din, and one results in a larger amount and the other in a smaller amount, so then you go with the you go with the smaller amount, because if you grabbed a little bit, you grabbed it, meaning Rashi explains elsewhere in Masechta Sukkah, if you're going to say that it means 30, then fine, you can say it surely shouldn't be below that. But if you say 50, you're going to have to bring a proof that it should be 50 rather than 30. So that's first of all. But oid, eved, havelo the melech, also Rabbi Yehuda figures, more logically, if you're going to learn something about an eved, about Hanukkah, you should be learning it from another din involving an eved. So since we have a known amount that it says in connection with an eved, namely 30, and here we have an unknown amount that it says with an eved, fine, there is an eved Kanani, here it's an eved Ivri, it doesn't matter. The point is we can still learn one from the other, and we can say, therefore, that means 30. Okay, Reb Shimon Omer Chamishim Kachamishim Sheba Erchin. Now, on the other hand, Tosfos asks, what about the Asher Berachah? Just like we said before, that we were going to learn from Pidyon HaBen rather than Ola Sri'iya according to the mayor, because we want to do Asher Berachah. So by the same thing over here, that should override the Tafasta Merubah Lo Tafasta. And the answer is, Tosfos says, because over there you only had, the difference is that you had, you had a Rekam in connection with Pidyon HaBen, in connection with the Bechor, and you have one Rekam that refers to the Bechor or to the Olas Re'iyah, and we're trying to figure out which one we should learn from. So then Asher Berachah tells us to learn from the larger one. Here you have Eved versus Erchin. You have one Eved, that one Nesina that it says by Eved, a different one that it says by Erchin. So now we're going to say Tafasta Merubah Lo Tafasta. So that's where Rabbi Yehuda is getting that it should be 30. He's learning from Gzeira Shava on the word Nesina, and he's saying you can't learn from a different place that it should be 50, because then that would be Tafasta Merubah Lo Tafasta, and you can't do that. Marsha explains a little further that where it says only one Nesina, then we can say that then it means that you're learning from Erchin, and in fact Reb Shimon is going to go on to say that you're going to learn from the largest amount of Erchin. But when it comes to Bechor, and when it comes to Bechor versus Olas Re'iyah, where you have two different, you have only one Rekam, but you have two different, they're two different dinim. So in other words, Marashah says, when you're learning from within one din, you can learn from the largest one, but when you have a choice of two dinim to learn from, then you may learn from the smaller one. Anyway, so that's where he gets to. Next, we said, Reb Shimon Omer Chamishim Kachamishim Sheba Erchin. Reb Shimon says you have 50 like the 50 of Erchin. So my time did Reb Shimon, because Gomer Nesinim Nesinim Erchin. He does use the Gzeir Shava from Erchin rather than from the Eved, like the way Rabbi Yehuda does. Malahalan Chamishim Afkan Chamishim. The same way as there, the maximum Erchin is 50, so here. So the Gemara says, Ve'eim of Pachas Sheba Erchin. What about maybe it's the smallest of the Erchin, which is only 3 Sloyim? And the answer is, again, Asher Berach, Hashem Elokecha, Ksiv. The pasuk says that Hashem blessed you, implying, in other words, that we want to learn from the largest one. So the Gemara asks, "V'neilaf misinin a sinim me'eved malahal and shloshim afkan shloshim." So why don't we learn the gzeira shava from the eved the way Rabbi Yehuda does, and then it would be only 30. So the answer is chod the tafasta merubalai tafasta. Number one, you have and the question is why not? You should, after all, chod the tafasta merubalai tafasta. Number one, because you should apply the same rule of tafasta merubalai tafasta, and 30 is less than 50. So if you want to say that it's 50, you should have to bring a proof for that, whereas 30 is more secure. V'oid eved me'eved havalei l'melech. And furthermore, shouldn't he be learning one eved, a case of an eved from another, the way Rabbi Yehuda does? So why is he saying instead you're learning from erchin and from the largest possible of erchin? And the answer is Reb Shimon micha micha gomar, because Reb Shimon is learning not just the Gzeira Shava of Nesina, but he's learning also a Gzeira Shava on the word Micha, which means being poor. By an Eved, you have the expression, if your brother is poor and he sells himself to you, by Erchen, you also have the expression, if he's too poor to pay the entire Erech, then they assess him a lesser value. So he learns that Gzeira Shava, and therefore, that's where he gets that you're learning from Erchen. Now Rashi points out that we know you can't make up a gzeira shava on your own. So here we were saying that we're saying that Reb Shimon. So first we thought Reb Shimon has the gzeira shava on the word nesina. Now we're saying that no, he's not using that gzeira shava. He didn't in fact learn that from his rebbeim. Rather, he's learning a different gzeira shava of micha, and therefore, so now you only have that in the case of erchin, and therefore that's the gzeira shava he's learning, and that's where he's getting from erchin. And again, since among erchin the largest is 50, and it says asheberacha, then that's what he's going with. Okay, so the Gemara says b'shleim alad meir ha'nidichtiv tsoin gurin v'yekev. According to Reb Meir, it's easy to understand why the Torah has to list three different kinds of things that you give the Eved, because he's saying that you have five sloyim of each one of them totaling 15. But according to Reb Yehuda, who learn it from other, who learn the number from other places, so according to them, why does it need to mention Son Gerdim Yekev? And the answer is Haimi Boile L'chidatanya. They need it to teach us what we learn in a braisa. You would think that Hanukkah is given only from these three things, sheep and grain and wine, that it says in the Psukim. How do we know that we include other kinds of things as well, that you have to give him Hanukkah from other things as well? The Pasuk says, which Hashem blessed you, so you have to give him from whatever Hashem blessed you with. So then why is it listing these three things? So it's like a klal of prat, a klal. It's telling you, what's special about son gurin and yekib? They're in the category of bracha. They are things that keep on increasing because they're the sheep have babies and the grain and the grapes keep on producing new grain and grapes. Af kol sheyesh mechla bracha. Therefore, it teaches us that anything else that's in that category of bracha, also you have to give Hanukkah. Yotzu ksofim, that comes to exclude money, because money doesn't become bigger on its own. Yeah, you can invest money and you'll earn more, but that's not really, it's more of an indirect thing, as opposed to the animals give birth and the grain and the grapes produce more of their own. Here, money does not. So therefore, you wouldn't have to give him Hanukkah of money. Give it to Shimon. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, I mean, Yotzu Prodes. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, no, what it is it comes to exclude mules, because mules are sterile, so they're infertile, so therefore, they're not Bechlal Brach. Now, why doesn't Rabbi Shimon agree to that? Rabbi Shimon says, Prodes Meshabchen Begufayhu. He says, Reb Shimon would say, on the other hand, though, it's true that mules don't have children, but they do become bigger in their body over time. Their bodies become bigger and stronger, and therefore they can be considered b'chlal bracha. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, k'safim avid b'huiska. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would counter that money you can invest. So therefore, so it can be considered b'chlal bracha. Anyway, the point is, either way, according to these Tanoim, that's why it was so ingrained with Yaakov, not like a mayor because we need to know an amount of five sloyim for each of the three things, but rather in order to give us a klal, that then, in order to give us a prat, which then we're going to derive a klal from. So the Gemara says Utsricha. Now, then the Torah would have to tell us all three, according to them, Tzon, Gonan, and Yekev. If the Torah only mentioned sheep, then you would think maybe you only have to give hanukkah from animals, not from things that grow from the ground. Therefore, the pasuk mentions the granary, so that's something that there's other, so the grain grows from the ground. And then if it only said Gordon the other way around, you'd think you give hanukkah only from that and not from animals. So therefore, it writes Tzon. Now, Yekev Lomeli, why does it mention also wine on the word grapes? On the face of it, that's the same category as grain. So that would be Lamar Lamautik Safim. Now, that's where you have, where according to Reb Shimon, that comes to exclude money, and Lamar Lamautik Pradis, and according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, to exclude mules. In other words, the point is, Rashi says, you would think, once you have at the end, Asher Berachafa, is maybe a ribui to include everything. So we need the word yekev to tell us that to tell us to exclude something, and what that something is, there Reb Shimon and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov are disagreeing about that. So now Tosfos points out that on the face of it, you have a klal of prata, but there it says hanik tanik lo, you should give him hanukkah, which implies from everything. There, yeah, then you have, it mentions son going to Yaakov, so therefore it should apply only to these. So Tosfos goes on to say that Tosfos brings a different girsa. On the contrary, we're saying that the word Yekev, according to Reb Shimon, is coming to include mules, because, like we said, according to Reb Shimon, he points out there is a certain bracha in mules in that they grow larger over time. And similarly, according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, it's coming to include Ksafim, where he says, because after all, you can invest them. So in other words, we would have thought if it only said Tzon and Gordon, you would have excluded both of them. Now that you have Tzon, Gordon, and Yekev, it's like a miut ach a miut, and therefore it comes to be mild or something. Okay. Tonon Abonim, we learn in another braisa, when it says, Asher berachcha Hashem alekecha, then Hashem blessed you. So yochol nisborach habayis begloloi, you would think that only if the house was blessed because of the Eved. So meaning, in other words, that the Eved actually did good, useful work, and now the household benefited from him. Manikim loy, then he would get hanukkah. Loynis baruch bayis begolay ein manikim loy. You would think if the household was not blessed through him, the work he did was shoddy or whatever, then you would think you don't give him hanukkah. Tamad lema hanik tanik mikol mokem. Note, the pasuk is hanik tanik, meaning regardless, you always give him hanukkah. So what does the pasuk mean to include by adding the words Asher Berachah, that Hashem blessed you? That means Akolafi Bracha Tenloi, whatever you give him in accordance with the bracha. So if you have more bracha that came to the household, then you should be adding to the minimum hanukkah. But in other words, you can't go below the values that we said, 15 according to the Meir, 30 according to Rabbi Yehuda, 50 according to Rabbi Shimon. You can't go less than that regardless. But if there was Nisbarach HaBayis B'Glaloi, then by all means you should be adding to that. And that's what we learn from Asher Berach. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Oymed Dvarim Kiksavon. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says no. It means exactly what it sounds like. Nisbarach HaBayis B'Glaloi Ma'anikim Loi. Only if the household was blessed because of him, do you give him Anokah. Lo Nisbarach HaBayis B'Glaloi. But if the house wasn't blessed because of him, because all he did was substandard work, then you don't give tanik. And he says, so what are you learning from the words hanik tanik, which the Tanakhama is saying teaches us that you give mahanaka regardless? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, no, give a Torah koloshim ne'adam. The Torah just speaks using common human language, and the common way in those times was to express that you have to do something by doubling the verb, by saying hanik tanik, but not according to him, that you're learning from it that there are, that you always have to give hanaka regardless. So those are the dinim of Hanukkah. Now, going on to, we talked about before, the case where the Odin dies. So let's talk more about that. Turn it up on him. Eved Ivri Ovedes HaBen Ben Ovedes HaBas. And Eved Ivri continues working for the son. So the Odin died during the 6 years, and then he continues working for the son. The in Ovedes HaBas, but if the Odin died and left only a daughter, then he doesn't work for her, he just goes free. Amayavriya and Avedis, Lais HaBen, Lais HaBas, whereas an Amayavriya does not work for either the son or the daughter, she always goes free when the master dies. And the same thing, Nirtza, Vahanimkal, Ovikachavim, the same thing, an Eved whose ear was pierced, or where he was sold to a goy, also Eino Ovid, Lais HaBen, Lais HaBas, then he doesn't work for the son or the daughter. So in other words, in short, in the only case where an Eved continues to work continues to work after the Oden dies is only if the Oden left a son, and only if this Eved is a regular one who's working for up to 6 years, not one who was Nirtza, and not one who was sold to a goy, and never an Amahavriya. So Gemara says Amamar, so let's analyze that Braisa that we've learned in the Braisa. Eved Ivri Obedis Aben Ven Obedis Abbas, Menohani Mili, where do we get that from that an Eved Ivri works for the son after the Odin dies? So the Tanan Abanim, we learn in another Braisa. The Pasuk says, Va'avodcha Sheish Shanim, he works for you for 6 years. And that means, Va'avodcha means L'cha V'lo L'yodesh, means only you, not your heir. Maybe it means not even for a son. In other words, Yodesh would mean other kinds of Yoshim, a daughter, a brother, or whatever, and Ben would be a son. So you're saying that Va'avodcha means he doesn't work for any other Yodesh. Maybe it includes that he doesn't work for the son either. Nope. Since the Pasuk in Mishpatim says he works for 6 years, and there it doesn't say Ya'avodcha, so therefore, it means that there can be cases where he's working for somebody else. Harela ben Omer. Then therefore, you're already including the son. Ha mani makayim va'avodcha sheishanim l'chav lo yorish. So the va'avodcha sheishanim must be coming to exclude other kinds of yorishim. Well, then the question is, as usual, given that we have one ribui and one miut, what makes us apply the ribui to one and the miut to the other? Mara isa l'rabis l'ben l'hoitzias ach. Why are you including the son and excluding the brother or other kinds of relatives? And the answer is mar banias haben she can't come tachas aviv l'yada or l'sdei achuza. The answer is that the son, and we're going to be marba, that he continues working for the son, because we find that the son, it takes the place of his father as far as certain dinim, as far as yield, where we're going to talk about in the next couple of blat, that you have the din of yield, that the master or his son can decide he wants to marry the Amahavriya, and in that case, the money that was originally received for her becomes the Kesef Kiddushin, and so that concept is called yield, and the Pasuk says that it can be either for the Odin or for his son, the in no yodan. So therefore, so the son stands in place of his father as far as that, and also as far as the case of Sdeyachoza, namely, a person is makdish, a field that he inherited from his ancestor. So then, so if he doesn't buy it back from Hekdish before Yovel, then what happens is, then he can't, then now the Gizbo went and sold it to somebody else, or maybe it's still in the possession of Hekdish, whatever. When it comes Yovel, then it doesn't return to the original owner. It goes to the Kohenim of the current Mishmar. We talked about this the other day, I think. So now, though, the Gemara in Erchen explains that there's an exception to that rule. If the Gizbo had sold it to anybody, to this rule would apply if the Gizbo sold it to anybody other than the son of the Makdish. But if he sold it to the son of the Makdish, then we say, since the Pasuk says, "Bimocher es hasod leish acher," and the son is not considered acher, so then the rule is that it goes back to his father, and that it goes back to his father in Yovel. It doesn't get forfeited to the Kohenim. So we see that the son stands in place of his father as far as that din. The same way as if the father himself had bought back the field, he would keep it. Once Yovel comes, the same way when his son bought it. So we see, therefore, that the son takes the place of his father as far as those din. So therefore, you have a reason to argue that if the Torah is going to be Marba, that there's a case where the Eved continues to work for somebody else, versus there's a Miut, where he works only for you, more logically to say that the Ribui applies to a son and the Miut to anybody else. So you want to ask, Adrava Marba, and he has to ask, Shaken, come tachas aviv l'achiv l'yivum. You could argue the other way around. The brother has an advantage over the son in that the brother takes the place of his brother when it comes to Yivum, whereas the son does not. The Gemara says, so what? Look, when does Yibum happen? Only when there's no son. Ho Yesh Ben and Yibum. The fact is, when there's a son, then there's no Yibum in the first place. So therefore, the brother's advantage is only when there's no son. So therefore, you can't say the brother ever has an advantage over the son. If there were to be a son, then you're not talking about Yibum B'chla. So therefore, you can say the son has an advantage. However, the Gemara says, Ela taima de'ika ha pircha. So what are you telling me? Only because you can slug it up like that. And if not for that, you could have argued the brother has an advantage because of his advantage with Yibum. Why? But typically, never mind that. You have two advantages of the son by Yud and by Sdeyachuza. Even if you were to say the brother has an advantage, it's only in one case, Yibum. Two is more than one anyway. So anyway, the Braisa should be saying, never mind the question of when Yibum happens and when it doesn't. The fact is, you would say something like Hani Adifi, you would say, you would say an expression along the lines of that the son has more advantages than the brother does. I think one answer is the reason why the Braisa didn't do that is because as a matter of fact, the concept of Sdei Achuza, that the son is different than other Yoshim, the Tana of a different Braisa, also learns it using the same logic, Klum Yesh Yibum Elam Makam Shein Ben, that there's Yibum only when there's no son. So in other words, we start with the fact that the son replaces his father as far as Yibum. Then we say, but what about, on the other hand, you could argue the brother replaces him when it comes to Yibum, and therefore when it comes to Sdei Achuza, given again that we have a posuk implying that if the Gizbar sells it to a certain kind of relative, then it goes back to the original owner in Yovel, rather than going to the Kohenim, and we don't know whether it's the son or the brother. So the Tana uses the same kind of logic. It's true a brother has an advantage over Yibum, but that advantage itself only exists when there's no son, so therefore the son really takes the place of his father more so, because he had takes his place by Yud, and there's no countervailing advantage that the brother has over the son, unless there's no son at all. So the concept that Sdei Achuza, a son, is different than a brother or any other relative, we learn from this very logic, and therefore, so we can't use that as a second data point to say that now you have two things, Yud and Sdei Achuza, that the son has an advantage over the brother, because really you only have one, Yud, and then from it you're learning all the other ones. So therefore we need the logic that there's no Yibum unless there's no son at all. Now Tosfos points out, I mean, you could say by Yerusha as well, son comes according to a brother, but the fact is Yerusha does apply to a brother, just that the son, well, it's true, you have the same kind of thing, the brother won't inherit unless there's no son, but still the fact is Yerusha does apply to both of them, whereas by Yibum, Yibum applies only to the brother, but it applies only when there's no son. Next, we said Omer Hevriya Eina Ivedis Lois HaBen V'Lois HaBas. We said an Omer Hevriya doesn't work for the son or for the daughter. So Menahan immediately, where do we know that from? Omer Apada De Omer Krav Afla Amos Chatasakein. The Pasuk says, also for your maidservant, you should do like that. Now, previously, the Pasuk talks about the concept of Ritzia, that if the slave doesn't want to go free, then you pierce his ear. And then it says, V'Afla Amos Chatasakein. So therefore, that doesn't mean that Ritzia applies to a girl. It doesn't. So it means, though, he kisha kosov l'nirtza. It means the posik is making a hekesh between the eved nirtza and the omer hevriya. Ma nirtza in oved lois haben lois habas. Just like the nirtza, as we said before, is not going to be working for the son or for the daughter, as we're going to learn soon from a posik. So af omer hevriya in oved lois haben lois habas, the same way in omer hevriya. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'ila moschatasekain l'hoch yudasa." You're telling me these words, "V'afla moschatasekain," are coming to teach us that din of whom she works for or not, and who she doesn't. Hami barila l'chedetanya. Don't we need those words for a different limud? When it says, "V'afla moschatasekain l'hanik," the words "V'afla moschatasekain" mean that you have to give her hanukkah as well, because after all, previously the Torah only says a man. Maybe it means, there's an interesting point that Mephoshim make, why the Torah should need to give us a ribui for that. One interesting point is, since we said that he worked twice as hard, and we said one point is he worked by night, because there's the whole matter with the Shifcha Knanis, by an Omer Hevriya, you don't have that, so therefore maybe the Torah needs to be Mechadish to us, that she gets Hanukkah as well. Anyway, the Braisa says, Ata omo lohanik, you're saying that that means that she gets hanoka, and that's what the hekesh means. Maybe it means that she also gets her ear pierced if she doesn't want to go after 6 years. Nope. Since in Parashas Mishpatim, when it first brings this mitzvah, it says if the eved says that means dafka and eved the loy omah hevriya. So there, it's specifically excluding an omah hevriya. Hare ritzia omer, then that takes care of ritzia. It applies only to an eved. Ha mani makayim va'afla mos hatazakein. So what can you possibly do with the words va'afla mos hatazakein? It must be lahanik to tell us that she gets hanoka. So therefore, we see from that she gets hanukkah. You can't also use that pasuk to say that she doesn't work for the son or for the daughter. So the Gemara answers: Im kain nichtiv kra la moscha kain. The pasuk could have left out the word tasa. It could have just said also for your maidservant like that, and that would give us the hekesh. My tasa. Why does it say you should do sham natarti? Therefore, you can learn both din. Number one, that she gets hanukkah, and number two, that she doesn't work for the son or the daughter because you have the hekesh with a nirtza. So you have two different kinds of hekesh. In other words, one compares her to an eved ivri in general that she gets hanukkah, and the other compares her specifically to an eved ivri who was nirtza, who doesn't work for the son or the daughter, as we're going to establish now in the Gemara. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman actually points out an interesting point in Kovetz Shiurim. Now, by an Eved, we know he gets his ear pierced because we penalize him because he stole to begin with and because he's over on Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim. But it could be because he stole and didn't have the money, or because he sold himself. And Omar Hevriya doesn't sell herself, she's sold by her father. So why would there be reason to penalize her that we would think? She gets Ritzia anyway. So he says, maybe in fact, we can learn from here that a woman who's a Gdola could actually sell herself as an Omar Hevriya as well. We usually talk about that the Omar Hevriya is sold by her father, but here the Kovetz Shiurim is Machadish, that maybe an adult woman could sell herself as an Omar Hevriya as well. Okay, now we said an eved whose ear was pierced or who sold himself to a goy ain't oved lois haben lois habas. When his master dies, he doesn't work for the son or the daughter, he just goes free. So why is that? Nirtza dichtiv v'rotza adonim v'ozdem v'matzeya v'avod doy lo'olam. The pasuk says the master pierces his ear with an awl and he works for him forever. So why does it have to say v'avod doy? It could have said v'ovad. So we learn from that v'loyas haben v'esabas. So therefore, he doesn't work for the son or the daughter. And nimkal ov gachav minayin. How do we know about the case where he was sold to a goy? Omachiskia omachra, because the pasuk says v'chishav in kainehu. The pasuk says that when he wants to go free and he's going to buy his freedom, he calculates with the one who purchased him. So that we learn from that, v'loyim yoshei kenehu, he's not obligated to make that calculation with the yoshim of the one who bought him. He just goes free right away as soon as the master dies. So now we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk about b'chlal, what Yoshim of a Ger, on the face of it, the concepts of Yerusha are told in the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim that apply to Jews. Do those same dinim b'chlal apply to a goy that we would talk about his son or his daughter yarshining him anyway? So we'll take up that point tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.